don't imagine you can associate with a period when you didn't have any running water, no electric lights, no TV, no radio, no automobile.
You know, I remember when I was young, I made me a dress out of feed sacks. I pulled four threads and I skipped an inch and pulled four more. Then I turned it the other way and I did the same thing. I made me a dress out of that and dyed it a pretty blue. And I wore it to church on Sunday and all of my friends were just envious of my pretty lace dress.
What I remember was if you wanted to learn to play the fiddle, you had to make one. Then if you wanted to learn a song, you had to listen and listen good. Try to make the fiddle sound like what you'd heard.
You know, I remember Daddy used to make a sassafras tea in the spring of the year to thin our blood. Then in the winter months, he made a boiled pine needle tea to thicken it.
You just start one note at a time, and then it starts coming to you, and you get it in your head. You just go.
You know, I remember Daddy used to make some kind of concoction out of roots and herbs. It was supposed to cure anything. But you know, I just don't remember what those roots and herbs were. You know, time just has a way of putting a haze over your glasses and a film over the yesterdays.
Someone asked me once what's the first tune I ever learned. Seems like I used to know that, but it's hard to say anymore. There's been so many things happen between now and then.
Play it at home. We'd have, of course, the family was all pretty much musically inclined, and we'd work all day in the fields or going to school or whatever, and at night after we ate supper, we'd go in and tune up our instruments, and we'd sit there for several hours and just play music and practice. It was a lot of fun.
You ever play into the night through the night?
Oh, yeah. Later on, when I got to be grown and got out playing, why, we would have jam sessions a lot of times. Big jam sessions. People from a large area would come in, be invited to some musician's home, and you would play music all night, and the lady of the house, whoever, would start cooking breakfast, and you'd eat breakfast there with them, and then chances are you'd turn around after you ate and you'd play another hour or two, right on up till after sunrise.
Did you
pines, in the pines where the sun never shines. Makes me shiver when the cold wind blows. Little girl, what have I done to make you treat me so? You caused me to weep, you caused me to moan, and you caused me to leave my home.
In the pines, in the pines, where the sun never shines, makes me shiver when the cold wind blows.
In the pines where the sun never shines, makes me shiver when the cold wind blows.
I grew up in the shadow of my grandmother, too. She was a banjo player, played an old banjo that my grandfather had bought her right after they married in Atlanta about 1917, 1918. And she played fairly well, two-finger style, not the claw hammer or drop thumb. It was just a two-finger style, a tremolo, I guess you would call it, style of playing. And she played, and she'd coax me and tell me, whatever you do, don't touch my banjo. You know, it would sit in the closet or it'd be in the bedroom somewhere where she'd have it out. She'd get it out and play for me, and I really enjoyed that. And my mother was a teacher, and she'd leave me there for grandmother to babysit me, and I'd get her to play the banjo. Well, when she'd go to feed the chickens or take the trash out or take the table scraps, whatever, or draw water from the well, I'd sneak in the bedroom, get the banjo out, and plunk, 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 because I already knew what one was. It wasn't anything, a foreign object or a new toy to me. It was just something that I wanted to do. Well, after spending many years with my grandmother, She died about 1973, 74, somewhere in there, October of 73, I think. And the only thing I got from the estate was her banjo. And I came down the road with the thing, an old cathead thing, and the fifth string by this time had been lost and gone, and it didn't have any strings on it. And my dad put it together and kind of got it in working order, and I started playing. And that old banjo was near and dear to me for the next 2 or 3 years, and that's the only instrument that I had that I could play. Of course, there was another banjo at the house, but it was, I'd torn it up earlier, of course, but, you know, Grandma's banjo meant a lot to me, and I kind of made a promise to Daddy if he'd buy me a new one someday, I wouldn't be good. I'd try to be the best there was. I guess I tried real hard. I don't know that I'm the best there is or the best that ever was, but I'm kind of satisfied with what I do for myself. It's for my own enjoyment. Love to play. And I've still got the old banjos just like they were. And I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Granny.
Sleeping on that New River train. Sleeping on that New River train. The same old train that brought me here. Soon God had carried me away. The same old train that brought me here, soon gonna carry me away.
And darling, you can't love too. No, darling, you can't love too. You can't love too, and your little heart be true. Darling, you can't love too.
Living on that New River train. On that New River train, the same old train that brought me here, soon gonna carry me away.
Well, I knew Brian Herbert Reese not only as a student, but I knew him as a neighbor. He lived in the militia district that I live in. He lived right up the road from where I live now. And he had to pass my house as he went to school. I had to catch the school bus down below the house where I lived. And so I knew him also as a student. But in the classroom, he could have been a good student. He was a good student in a lot of ways. He's unusual. He was a unique person, quiet, unassuming, other than he didn't like to do math. And, of course, he was in my math class. But at one time he said, well, why should I learn to equate equations, expand binomial problems or theorems or do theorems in geometry or logarithms? I'll never need it. He says, well, I learned a long time ago that there's 12 inches in a foot, 3 feet in a yard, 100 cents in a dollar.
Well, in the evenings after all the chores were done, we would, all of us would gather around the fireplace, and each one doing their own thing, whatever they enjoyed doing. And my mother would be knitting and crocheting, most likely. And my brother Hub would be, he would either be writing on his poetry or reading, maybe. And lots of times I was doing my homework for school, and if not, probably reading. And Eva May was there too at home at that time. She liked to read a lot, and she would embroider and a piece quilts or something like that she liked to do. And everyone would sit up until about 11 o'clock at least, except my dad, and he always went to bed, as people used to say, with the chickens. He went to bed about dark every night.
Hub was a great fan of Charles Lindbergh, you know, Charles Lindbergh's historic class, 1927, that wasn't far away from 1930. And Hub knew everything about Charles Lindbergh, the spirit of St. Louis. And he was going to be an aviator. He told me that he had an ancestor that in the 1890s actually built an airplane or a glider sort of a thing, and it got off the ground with a man in it. And that was several years before the Wright brothers. And since that time, many reputable people in Union County vouch for that.
Well, my mother was always just really overjoyed about his writing and his talent for writing and everything. Well, whenever he really began to write, and he needed to send them away to magazines and things, you know. So she knew that he needed to have a typewriter. So she saved her chicken and egg money, or egg money was what it was, really, because she kept her chickens. But anyway, she would sell the eggs and she saved enough to buy him the typewriter. Well, I remember the typewriter cost $29. But it must have been a good one because he used it to type almost all his work. He never bought another typewriter until not long before he died. He bought one, but I think he still used the old one some anyway.
I think the one person that realized his potential and his caliber was Dr. Nicholson, the principal. I think he realized he saw something in Hub that the rest of us didn't see. And all the girls liked it. And a lot of times they'd come to me and say, Miss Dora or Miss Allison, what's wrong with Hub today? He didn't speak to me. And he had the book in his hand. And then he reads all the time. He reads on the bus. And why doesn't he speak to us, you know? And they liked him. And I think he liked the girls, but he just didn't have time for them. He called it their foolishness.
My father gave my mother two different plots of land, which one was for her flower garden and the other was for the vegetable garden. She always loved to have both types of gardens. I think he was definitely happiest in the mountains. I think that he enjoyed somewhat his stay in other parts of the country. I mean, especially California. I think he enjoyed his residency out there at UCLA. I think that he enjoyed that, but he never wanted to leave the mountains. Not for good, you know.
I know a valley green with corn, where Notley's waters roll and run. From the deep hills where first at morn it takes the color of the sun and bears it burning through the shade of birch and willow till its tide pours like a pulse and never stayed dark where the gulf's edge reaches wide. There, while the twilight spins its dream of light and shadow both, the whir of bats and cry of doves will seem a very likeness of the air. About a house, the ivy's foot creeps slowly up to hide the eaves and wreathes the chimney dark with soot unto a colonnade of leaves. And one will water in the yard, soft shadowed by the last of day, as if she waited for a word from lips 3,000 miles away that yearned to speak against her head. But dumb behind the palm of space, taunting to trembling, while there, darkness obliterates her face.